evening sky darkens into night. Lights come on in a waterfront cityscape. The lights merge to form the words Miramax Films. A dark, cloudy sky fills the screen. The image warps and curls into a paper dart-like shape, the logo of Mirage. Miramax Films presents a Mirage Enterprises bona fide production, Cold Mountain.
Dear Mr. Inman, I began by counting the days, then the months. I don't count on anything anymore except the hope that you will return. And the silent fear that in the years since we saw each other, this war, this awful war, will have changed us both beyond all reckoning.
The image of a mountain rising high above wooded foothills swims briefly into view and dissolves into darkness and a tunnel beneath the earth lit by a row of lamps. A caption reads, "Near the end of the Civil War, northern troops lay explosives under the southern defenses." A line of stooping figures roll wooden barrels along the tunnel. A second caption, "The Siege of Petersburg, Virginia, July 1864. Southern troops await attack." A rabbit scampers over scrubland, where rows of spikes have been driven into the ground in front of a line of trenches. Behind, cannons and watchtowers are mounted on top of a steep embankment protecting the town of Petersburg. In a teeming, tented city, soldiers strip boots and coats from their dead companions before nailing down their coffins. A boy comes by with a barrow.
This poor boy's from Alabama. He's a long way from home.
Thank you.
The blonde teenager in his gray Confederate uniform trots off with a full barrow of clothes.
Broken Yanks just attacked.
In the gray dawn light, he makes his way through a tunnel in the embankment, past soldiers sleeping or eating their breakfast, and then on down into the trenches. One bearded soldier Inman watches the boy handing out uniforms. He turns to a Native American soldier, Swimmer.
It's Mo Oakley's boy.
Swimmer looks and nods.
He can't be old enough to fight, can he?
Wheeling his barrow along the duckboards of the deep wooden-sided trench, young Oakley sees Inman sitting on the ground.
Morning.
Morning, sir.
Got some boots and jackets.
You want one?
Yeah. You want that?
Thanks.
Inman and Swimmer each take a jacket. Inman sits back down and pulls a roll of letters from his pack and unties them. Wrapped in the middle is a photograph of a somber-looking young blonde woman.
I think now on the fleeting moments between us and wish I could repair them. My awkward nature, the things left unsaid.
In the tunnel, the last barrels are trundled into place.
All right, that's it.
Two Union soldiers walk back down the tunnel, unreeling a spool of fuse behind them.
Enough powder here to blow a hole in the sky.
Yeah, a real Yankee good morning.
In the trench, Inman places an envelope in a battered, dog-eared book as a marker. Behind him, Oakley climbs a ladder and peers nervously over the breastwork of the trench. Inman stows book, letters, and photo in his pack. Swimmer, the Native American, watches.
That old book of yours is in shreds.
Same as us. Seen too much war.
Hey, Oakley. Don't worry, son. Them Yankee boys keep store hours. They ain't open yet.
At the mouth of the tunnel, one of the Yankee soldiers lights a match and sets it to the fuse wire. They scuttle away.
Close it up.
The two Union sappers peep over their sandbag parapet. Below them, row upon row of Union soldiers lie flat on their stomachs, guns at the ready. In the Confederate trench, a rabbit pops up from beneath a soldier's feet.
Where'd you come from? Hey, that's fresh breakfast.
He's mine, butcher.
As Inman and Swimmer finish arming themselves, they smile at Butcher chasing the rabbit. Suddenly, the earth erupts beneath them. Inman is hurled to the ground and buried. A huge black mushroom cloud rises over the Petersburg defenses. Some pages of Inman's book are eaten away by flames. The photograph escapes more or less intact. North Carolina, 3 years earlier, Reverend Monroe arrives in Cold Mountain in a pony and trap with his daughter. The townspeople are building a new chapel. On the roof, Inman toils silently.
When I came with my father to the town of Cold Mountain, I was so shy of how I looked. So out of place. But did you know how happy I was to escape from Charleston? From a world of slaves and corsets and cotton.
What do you fools think you'll be fighting for?
The South?
Call this nail Northern aggression.
Damn right.
I call this nail Yankee skulls.
Last time I checked, the South had direction.
Figured you for a Lincoln lover, Jake.
I tell you, as soon as I finish this chapel, I'm gonna go off and kill me some Yankees.
Pissing Benny.
Fighting for a rich man's slave, that's what.
Whoa. Comes the minister.
Damn, thank you. Will you assist my daughter?
Lord of mercy, look at the bonnet.
Look what's in it.
Oakley Ham and a Hammer, boy.
That's a true Southern belle.
Mr. Swagger, good morning to you.
Morning, Reverend.
Let's go. You remember my daughter, Ada.
Miss Monroe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Excellent program.
Good morning.
Mrs. Swanger, Mrs. Castlereagh.
Morning, Reverend.
Now, if you all excuse me, in Charleston, my congregation would still be disputing the size of the window.
Mrs. Swanger.
Miss Monroe, I was just thinking about you. Cold Mountain must feel like the end of the world.
Ada Monroe shakes her head.
Not at all. It's very beautiful.
Well, you put us all to shame. Men up here had a bearing on what they thought a woman was, and then you showed up. Oh.
Ada laughs modestly.
No, I doubt that.
Oh, believe me, if you was to say a word to one of these fools, I could get my top field cleared.
Ada smiles.
Anyone?
No, him in particular. Up in the rafters. Won't normally say boo to a goose.
As Ada looks up, Inman turns round. Their eyes meet.
He's been pressing me since the day you arrived here.
Ada picks up a tray of glasses of cider from a nearby table and turns back to Mrs. Swanger.
Your top field clear?
That's right.
Ada goes to the wooden frame of the chapel under construction and calls up to Inman.
Good morning. I'm Ada Monroe.
Inman.
Inman.
W.P. Inman.
W.P. Inman.
Repeating the thing doesn't improve it.
She's slightly taken aback.
People call me Inman.
His workmates nudge each other.
How about that? Inman speaks.
If you were to take a glass of cider, your friends might stop staring. Inman.
He climbs down towards her.
You're just jealous.
He stops on the bottom rung of the ladder, towering over her, and reaches for a glass.
Thank you.
He glances at her. Ada's face and blonde ringlets are shaded by a stylish, brimmed straw hat. Her cream dress suggests city sophistication.
And what do you do?
I work wood. Mostly work wood.
She glances round at Mrs. Swanger and then looks back at him.
Clear fields?
Sandy-haired Inman sips thoughtfully at his glass before turning back to her.
I can clear a field.
She smiles awkwardly.
Was there something in particular you wished to say to me?
He looks at her directly. A smile flashes over his face, then disappears.
Not that comes to me.
She stares up at him. He turns away as he steps off the bottom rung of the ladder, then turns back to her.
I'll say thank you for the cider.
He goes. In the devastated trench, Inman struggles up from under a mound of loose earth at the lip of a vast burnt crater.
You walk unscathed. No plowman's blade will cut thee.
His hand falls on his charred letters and the photograph of the young woman, Ada. He picks them up and gazes round at the carnage. Smoke and dust have turned day into night. Fires burn in the thick gloom. Wounded men stagger around as if drunk. The teenager Oakley clambers up one side of the crater, every scrap of clothing blown from his body by the explosion, his skin black and red with dirt and blood. At the crater rim, he stops and peers into the smoke. A single horse struggles to its feet and trots away, apparently uninjured. As he stares, dim shapes appear through the flames and drifting smoke. Soldiers, in blue uniforms, trotting at the double with swords, rifles, and fixed bayonets. Led by standard bearers waving huge Union flags, the Yankees charge the Confederate position. Wave upon wave. Like a swarm of ants, they pour over the rim of the crater and down into the vast, elongated hole. The Union soldiers try to clamber up the far side, but the slope is too steep. More soldiers press from behind. Panic sets in. Confederates fire down into the crater.
Fools dug their own grave!
Butcher, firing down at the Yankees, turns round to Inman and grins.
It's a turkey shoot!
What?
It's a turkey shoot! They've run themselves into a hole! Hail! Buster!
He shoots again. Motionless, Inman stares down into the milling, swirling pit. Soldiers hurl bayonets like spears. Confederates scramble down into the pit. Union soldiers scramble up to the Confederate lines. Inman is attacked and starts to fight. He sees young Oakley fighting hand to hand. Oakley and his opponent fall back into the pit.
Oakley!
Inman jumps down into the melee, fighting his way towards Oakley. Inman sees Oakley get bayoneted in the stomach. Inman struggles towards the boy. From the lip of the crater, swimmer sees him, draws a knife, and leaps down with an Indian war cry. They fight towards Oakley, who's in danger of being trodden underfoot and drowning in the mud. Inman struggles towards the young boy. He starts carrying him away from the thick of the fighting towards the side of the pit. Covering them, swimmer is attacked by a black Union soldier. Native American Confederate and African American Yankee fight for possession of swimmer's bloody knife. Inman picks up a dead man's revolver and fires blindly. Oakley slips from his grasp. Inman tries to pull him to his feet. The mud and water at the bottom of the crater turn red as the fighting rages around them.
I've got you!
After the battle under a hot sun, the Yankee dead are heaped into the crater. Confederate soldiers methodically strip them of their belts and boots and search through their belongings. Confederate wounded are carried away in an endless stream. Inman walks beside Oakley, who's on a stretcher.
I got a few. You saw?
I saw.
Blonde-haired Oakley licks his parched lips and tries to lift his head.
Am I gonna die?
Inman looks at the stretcher-bearer, who hastily averts his eyes.
Your folks can be real proud of you.
He puts his hand briefly on Oakley's shoulder, turns and stares back down into the crater, now a mass grave of Union dead. In the field hospital, a bearded fiddler walks past the wounded.
Son, this fella says he'll play whatever you want.
He tucks his fiddle under his chin.
What about Bonaparte's Retreat? That's one I play.
Play me something sweet, like a girl's waiting for me.
You heard him.
I only know a couple of tunes.
Like when you're up Bishop's Creek and you're thirsty and the water's so cool.
The fiddler shakes his head unhappily.
I don't know what music that is.
He looks down at Oakley with sympathy and raises his fiddle to his chin, closing his eyes as he starts to play. Oakley, swallowing hard, turns his blackened face up towards Inman.
I'm reaching Cold Mountain before you.
His eyes looking mournful, Inman takes hold of Oakley's hand, gently feeling his pulse. Oakley's hand falls limp. Inman stands over the dead boy and thinks back to a sunny day, and a pony and trap coming along a path between an upper and a lower field, with a piano loaded up on it. In the upper field, sandy-haired Inman guides a horse-drawn plough along a strip of brown soil.
Good morning, Sally!
Inman looks up from his ploughing as Ada talks to Sally Swanger.
Well, that's a fine-sounding thing.
Oh, my piano.
Ada runs her hand fondly across the top of her piano.
Oh, I've been missing it.
Thank you, by the way. Inman's in my top field, clearing his debt.
Oh, dear.
Ada looks across to the top field and sighs.
And then he had nothing to say.
He was happy.
She looks up searchingly.
Really?
Are men so different in Charleston?
Ada looks away.
Men? I don't know.
If you're saying you might like him, why not go over and say good morning?
I should be getting along.
As Inman leans into his plough in the field, the carriage below him moves in tandem with him. Ada in her bonnet, lace blouse and lilac skirt sits with her back to the horses playing her piano. They glance at each other. Then both look away. Inman stops and, glancing over at Ada again, takes off his straw hat, wipes his hair and sweaty face with the back of his hand, and gazes in her direction. The horse-drawn cart trundles on. Inman squints up at the sun and puts his hat back on again. At her home, dressed in elegant black, Ada is playing for her father's invited guests.
Dear daughter, Ada, who's given up so much.
Ada spots Inman lurking in a doorway.
And upon whom are alive. Friends, we are both very happy to have this opportunity tonight to thank you from our hearts for your kind welcome and, most of all, such a fine chap. So,
a man strides purposefully across the room.
Thank you, and God bless you.
Without acknowledging Reverend Monroe.
Our house is always open to any of you at any time. Welcome.
Esco. Monroe turns to Esco Swanger.
That gentleman, he helped build the chapel?
Him? No, that's Teague. At one time, the Teague family owned the whole of Coal Mountain. My farm, your farm, all belonged to his grandpappy. Teague wanted this place bad when you got it. And he's here sniffing out an advantage.
Ada watches Inman.
There's no advantage here, except to celebrate a job well done.
Inman goes out, and she follows.
Miss Monroe?
Thank you.
She steps out onto the porch where Inman is pacing. She smiles at him playfully.
Were you never planning to come inside?
I'm wetter than a fish.
There's a good fire going.
I'm all right. You're always carrying a tray.
She looks away, coyly.
I was going to take some root beer over to the Negroes.
He gazes at her pale, slender neck, gleaming in the lamplight. She turns to him with a smile, then sighs with a hint of impatience.
Somebody said you were enlisting. Are you?
If there's a war, we'll all fight.
She blinks and looks away in frustration. She starts to walk away from him with her tray laden with glasses. Helplessly, he watches her. She stops and turns back to him. He searches her face expectantly.
Did you get a picture made?
Say again?
A tintype. With your musket and your courage on display.
You're laughing at me.
I don't know you.
Inman awkwardly looks about him.
This doesn't come out right. If it were enough just to stand without the words.
It is.
She looks him squarely in the face.
It is.
With a resolute smile on her lips, he gazes at her in wonder.
You look at the sky now. What color is it? Or the way a hawk flies? Or you wake up and your ribs are bruised thinking so hard on somebody. What do you call that?
Her lips part as she holds him in her gaze. He puts his hat on and takes the tray from her.
I'll do that. I can't get much wetter.
What if you were killed and I'll never see you again? You said after a few years I would barely remember your name. Inman. It is more than 3 years and I remember your name.
In the trench.
Soldiers, don't get up. You were mentioned tonight in my report. You men from Cold Mountain have once again been heroes for the cause. There are Yankees, and that stand of trees between us stuck there from the retreat. If they stay there, tomorrow morning they can shoot us down for sport.
Inman and his friends crawl forward on their stomachs. With his gun cocked, Inman signals to Butcher and creeps forward. Butcher is hit.
Let's go! Butcher's down!
Inman runs back to try to help Butcher.
Leave him! He's gone! Let's go!
A flare shoots up in the dark sky. Fired on by their own side, Swimmer is shot. Inman doggedly tries to drag Swimmer out of the line of fire and is shot in the neck. Another flare fizzes up into the air. Inman lies on his back, staring up into the dark sky, gulping weakly as he tries to breathe, and thinks back to a white dove fluttering dreamily up against a shut window pane. Its feathery wings flapping together as it settles on the top of a pew. The back door of the newly white-painted chapel opens and Inman slips inside. Ada, dressed in black, is standing next to a simple cross.
It's supposed to bring good luck. Brute caught in a room.
I'm so sorry to have kept you waiting. Should just be a few seconds.
Reverend Monroe addresses a flock of people who've gathered outside the chapel door. Inside, Inman gently coaxes the dove onto his wrist. Ada watches with a look of wary fascination, with her characteristic little frown, as the bird calmly nestles in Inman's long, slender fingers. Inman meets Ada's adoring gaze. They come out of the chapel. Inman steps forward, raises his cupped hands, and releases the dove. The people tilt their faces upwards as they watch it fly away. In another flashback, he sees himself fit and well and wearing his straw hat, striding briskly across the garden of Ada's house towards the porch and its back door. He stands back from the veranda door as Monroe opens it. He removes his hat.
Mr. Inman.
Reverend.
What can I do for you?
I have some sheet music. Belonged to my father. No use to me.
Thank you.
You must come in.
I should probably get along.
Mr. Inman is more comfortable outdoors. Perhaps we might take a walk.
A splendid idea.
Monroe, smiling amiably, comes out onto the porch.
Let me just get your hat.
The Reverend smiles back at her, and he and Inman continue on down the steps.
I dragged my poor daughter 400 miles from Charleston to Cold Mountain because my doctors, they've been saying my chest is weak, so the air's supposed to do me good. But it's the view I think heals.
It's what people say we're fighting for. Keep it that way.
I have no plans to preach war in my church, Mr. Inman.
I imagine God is weary of being called down on both sides of an argument.
They approach a bar gate. Inman pushes it open for Ada and Monroe to pass through.
I imagine God is.
Lightly, she takes her father's arm, lowering her eyes as she comes past Inman.
Thank you.
As he goes to close the gate, she glances back at him.
Now, your father played the piano, did he?
That's right. He was a teacher.
And is your father living, Mr. Inman?
He's not.
And your mother?
No, sir. She died when I was born.
Back at the house, Ada happily contemplates the book of music Inman brought them. She sits down at the piano and carefully turns its yellowing pages. Tucked into the spine of the book, she finds a black-and-white photograph of Inman, looking his serious self. She smiles to herself as she gazes at it, caressing his image with her fingers. The congregation filling the white-painted chapel are mostly dressed in black. The men in black suits, white shirts and black neckties, the women wearing black bonnets, all of them repeatedly raising their right hands to shoulder height, their palms turned upwards, punctuating the hymn. Sitting in a side pew, Ada, dressed in a cream dress and pale bonnet, is also singing with gusto. Oakley bursts in through the door and whispers to some of the men. Inman notices but goes on singing with passion and conviction.
We got our war!
Men outside the chapel embrace with joy. Others follow them out, sensing the excitement. Inman's eyes meet Ada's across the chapel. She looks away, then back again. They remain motionless as the chapel gradually empties around them. Finally, Inman stands up and goes to follow the rest.
We got our war! We got it! We got it! It's about time!
War! Rook hugs Inman.
Inman! Ready to fight, son! Ready to fight!
Inman's friend, Rook.
We got war, man!
Now you have your war.
With a dismissive look, Ada walks off.
Ada.
Great day for North Carolina. Those who follow Lincoln or preach abolition, you best keep one eye open when you're sleeping. Old boogeyman might get you.
Inman grabs the bridle of Teague's horse.
You the law all of a sudden, Mr. Teague?
That's right, son. Home guard for Hayward County. I'm the law from today. You all go fight now. We watch over your sweethearts.
Hey, Teague, why ain't you fighting?
Because he's too old.
Teague, with his floppy hat, trots past Inman and Ada.
You might be safer back in Charleston.
Ada nods miserably, then turns her head, looking past him.
But then he'll be waiting for you.
Three cheers for North Carolina!
Right.
Three cheers for the South! Hip, hip, hurrah! Hip, hip, hurrah! Hip, hip, hurrah!
Ada and Inman gaze at each other. Down at the train yard where the wounded are loaded on board, a messenger comes scurrying alongside a train, almost falling in the mud.
Inman! Belongs to Inman!
I got him. He's here.
A soldier lays the rolled-up book on Inman's lap.
They found that book you've been worrying about, soldier.
Inman's eyes blink in the dark. Ada, wearing her straw bonnet tied under her chin with a bow, appears on the porch of a boarding house in the town, clutching a book. She stops outside a door. Inman, bare-chested, opens the door and shuts it again. She turns away, disconcerted. She looks at the closed door and starts to leave, glancing back with a hurt and mystified look. Inman just catches sight of her.
Wait!
She pops her head back round and stands demurely at the end of the porch as Inman buttons up his shirt. He flashes her a nervous smile. She steps forward.
I found you this book to take with you. William Bartram. They tell me it's good.
I think he writes about these parts, the author, so...
She stands with her hands behind her back like a shy schoolgirl.
And this?
She hands him an envelope. Awkwardly, he takes it, and as he starts to open it, she moves slightly away, embarrassed. It's a photograph of a rather somber-looking Ada.
I'm not smiling in it.
Inman gasps.
I don't know how to do that. Hold a smile.
In the street below them, army volunteers march along past flag-waving townspeople. Inman tries to say something to Ada, but the words don't appear. He slips the photograph back into its envelope. She looks away awkwardly, sighing with frustration and disappointment. As she moves to go,
Ada.
He reaches for her and kisses her on the lips, lifting her feet off the ground as they sway together, locked in a passionate embrace. Rourke and Oakley come rushing past the oblivious couple.
Whoa! He'll be back in a month! Kiss her for me!
Inman darts inside his room, puts on his grey peaked cap and tunic while Ada waits outside. In the street below, Rourke calls up.
Come on, let's go!
Inman comes out of his room and gazes at Ada.
I'll be waiting for you.
His lips part, but no words come. He presses her book to his lips, and with his eyes fixed on her, he moves away from her, unblinking, before finally turning away and hurrying off to join the other men. Outside his door, with hands clasped behind her back, Ada turns and desperately tries to open a wooden shutter on the window to catch a last glimpse of him. She looks down at the sea of grey uniforms. Inman, walking backwards as he does up the buttons on his tunic, is looking up at her. He turns to face front, but glances back at her one final time. Further down the street, he glowers over at Teague watching the procession. Glumly, Ada lowers the wooden shutter. Black slaves pick cotton.
Look out the window, ladies. See what these poor fools are dying for. How many would still lose a leg for the rich man's slave? Most of these soldiers would be dead by morning. If they're stubborn by nightfall.
I have other men outside in the courtyard waiting for the beds. So any kind word will be a blessing.
A tired doctor swigs from a bottle.
It's the heat. I'm sorry they rot.
How are you, son?
A volunteer nurse, Mrs. Morgan, looks anxiously at bearded Inman, a bandage around his neck and breathing with difficulty.
I'm sorry. You want water? Cold Mountain?
Cold Mountain. Do you worry when there's no word from him?
In the Reverend's pony and trap.
From Mr. Inman?
Ada nods.
Yes.
She glances up at him, then looks back down at her lap.
But then I've tried counting the number of words which have passed between Mr. Inman and me. Not very many. But I think about him, Daddy, all the time.
I lost your mother after 22 months of marriage.
Ada's eyes fill.
It was enough to fill a life.
And she considers his words with a grateful smile. Later, they finish lunch at a table set under a tree in the garden.
That was the last of the ham.
It was delicious.
I have to learn how to cook.
I was thinking of saying something in chapel. Perhaps some of the women folk volunteer.
I can't have people coming here and cooking for me.
He shakes his head.
I so regret. I should have raised you less like a companion and more like a young woman. I'm sorry, Ada. And for dragging you here.
I'm not sorry.
She bends down and plants a kiss on his forehead.
I would have followed you anyway.
and looks at him with mock severity.
To Mongolia.
Mongolia.
But with no one left to work this place, nothing to buy, nothing left to buy it with, I just don't know how we're going to get through another winter.
She picks up the lunch tray. He puts out a hand to detain her.
Will you play me something? Something peaceful while I look over my sermon.
It's too damp out here. You should come inside.
No. I like it.
He dons his pince-nez with a smile and turns to his papers and books. With the sash window raised, Ada plays the piano in the front parlour that looks out onto the veranda and down into the garden. Rain starts to trickle down the window panes.
Daddy, bring the tablecloth in.
Glancing from her music into the garden.
Come inside before you drown.
An anxious frown clouds her face. She cranes her neck to see down into the garden, then hurries out onto the veranda. The house, built into the side of a steep hill, is supported on stout brick pillars, with bushy shrubs planted between the pillars. Gathering up the skirts of her black dress, Ada hurries down the side steps, stooping to pick up some loose leaves of paper that have blown off the table under the tree. Her father is sitting back with his eyes closed, his mouth half open, heedless of the rain. She reaches out a hand as if to shake him awake, then shrinks back, clutching her stomach, and dashes towards the road. In the hospital, Inman lies on his back on a grubby pillow.
Cavaletta. North Carolina. It's come a long way.
Mrs. Morgan, the nurse, takes the letter out of the stained, creased envelope.
It's not too recent. It's written this past winter.
She turns the letter over. Inman's eyes flicker.
I'm afraid I can't read who it's from.
As she reads, Ada, in her nightgown, goes into her father's bedroom and opens the wardrobe.
Dear Mr. Inman, since you've left, time has been measured out in bitter chapters. Last fall, my poor father died.
She slips on Monroe's black coat.
Our farm at Black Cove is abandoned.
And stares at her face in the mirror.
Every house in these mountains touched by tragedy.
Missing soldiers' photos are pinned up on the wall of the chapel.
Each day, the dread of learning who has fallen, who will not return from this terrible war. And no word from you. Are you alive? I pray to God you are.
She sits in the chapel alone.
This war is lost on the battlefield and is being lost twice over by those who stayed behind.
You ain't coming back, you know that.
Teague's bulky frame fills the chapel doorway. Slowly he walks up behind Ada.
You must know that in your heart.
He sits on the pew in front of her, facing her.
Look at me.
She keeps her red-rimmed eyes averted.
Look at me.
Reluctantly she looks at his straggle-haired, crop-bearded, fleshy, self-assured face.
I'm not nothing.
He stares back at her, complacently.
I'm still waiting. As I promised I would. But I find myself alone and at the end of my wits. Too embarrassed to keep taking from those who can least afford to give.
At her house.
Ada! It's Sally! Ada!
Look at the state of this place.
Well, set it on the porch.
Ada hides behind the shrubs under the veranda.
She let them slaves go free, and now, poor soul, she's got nobody and nothing and waiting on a ghost.
Ada watches Esco and Sally go. A beady-eyed rooster struts up behind her. It pounces. She beats the bird away, bumping her head. The winter snows come.
My last thread of courage now is to put my faith in you.
She leads the one remaining cow.
And to believe I will see you again. So now I say to you, plain as I can, if you are fighting, stop fighting. If you are marching, stop marching.
She grabs under the snow for potatoes.
Come back to me.
As Mrs. Morgan continues, Inman slowly opens his eyes.
Come back to me is my request.
In the glow of Mrs. Morgan's candle in the hospital, Inman's eyes shine with newfound purpose. He nods faintly.
Come back to me. It's my request.
Daylight in the hospital grounds. Inman, fully dressed, limps out into the sunshine.
Hey, get your peanuts now from the blind man. Hey, you're a hot Cooper here.
The grounds throng with patients and visitors. Inman sits down next to the blind peanut seller.
Getting better, soldier?
Seems that way.
I wouldn't hurry. War's almost done. Don't need your help to lose it.
Inman, with a scarf tied around his injured neck, faces the peanut seller.
Been meaning to ask you, where'd you take your wound?
Oh, before I was born. Never set eyes on a thing in this world. Not a tree, a gun, or a woman. Put my hand on all three of them.
What would you give for that? Have your eyeballs for 10 minutes.
10 minutes? I wouldn't give a Indian head cent. Might turn me hateful.
You sure what seeing's done to me?
No, it's not the way I'm in it. You said 10 minutes. It's having a thing, and then the loss of it I'm talking about.
Then we don't agree. There's not much I wouldn't give for 10 minutes to someplace.
Yeah, someplace. Or someone.
He hands Inman a paper twist of hot peanuts.
You watch yourself now. They are shooting men who take themselves a walk.
The following morning, Inman throws back the blankets on his bed and sits up, dressed in civilian working clothes. The soldier on the straw bed next to him raises one hand in a weak salute. Inman nods, slings his duffel bag over his shoulder, waits until a sentry passes the window, then opens the shutters and climbs out. He makes his way down to the sea. A caption reads, "The Carolina Coast, September 1864. That same day in Cold Mountain, people gather outside the post office and store to hear Teague. As Teague's young acolyte reads a proclamation, Ada, ignoring him, pushes her way through the crowd.
By order, Zebulon Vance, governor of this great state of North Carolina, any soldier turned deserter is guilty of treason and should be hunted down like a dog.
The blonde acolyte chuckles.
Any man takes in a deserter is likewise guilty of treason. Home Guard is powered to enter any place it sees fit without notice or constraint. Captain Teague needs more volunteers. Any man whose age or infirmity prevents him from fighting can join us to protect this county from Yankee raiders and traitors to the cause.
Is there a letter for me?
Nothing. We've been getting no posts through at all.
The sooner we lose this war, the better. They say not one boy in 10 is coming home to these mountains. Teague and his rabble throwing their weight around, they're worse than the Yankees.
Let's go.
Might I speak with you, please?
In the store, Ada unwraps a small bundle.
This was the Reverend Monroe's.
She pushes a silver watch across the counter.
I don't know who would want a watch.
She fights back the tears.
Who can bear to look at the time?
The shopkeeper lifts a cloth of a tray of salted meat.
I've got a little salt pork you can have.
She pushes the watch back to Ada.
Keep your daddy's watch.
Ada blinks gratefully.
Thank you.
The shopkeeper wraps up a thick slice of meat.
I was talking to some of the other women folk about maybe looking in on you at Black Cove. It's hard right now, but...
I know, I manage very well, whatever the talk is.
Ada takes the meat.
I'm very grateful for the pork.
With resolute determination in her eyes.
Which I intend to pay for, of course.
The kindly shopkeeper looks at her doubtfully as Ada walks to the door of the store. Teague blocks her path.
Is everything all right?
She nods and walks past him, eyes lowered. The road back to Black Cove leads past the Swanger's homestead. Sally is working in the field. She sees Ada, dressed in a drab brown skirt, black bonnet, and her father's oversized black coat, hurrying by.
Ada! Ada!
Sally goes up to meet her.
Why, Ada, you are skinny as a whippet, girl. You are coming indoors with me.
No, I can't. I don't...
Ada flounders indecisively.
I can't keep counting on your kindness.
Now, come on, I'm making a stew. We'd be proud to have you. Esco's going to be wanting his dinner.
Inside.
I just want to stop, I tell you. You know,
Sit on the porch with Sal. Watch my boys in the fields.
Holler, good job. Every hour or so.
That'd be a good day when our boys get home. What about your people in Charleston?
Sally ladles out a second helping for Ada as Esco sits down.
There are no people. And there's no money. My father had some bonds and investments. They're worthless now, of course. The war. They're not worth anything. I don't have anywhere else to go.
She eats a spoonful of stew, dabs at the corner of her mouth with a finger, and looks up at Sally.
I don't want to go.
Sally nods sympathetically.
You're waiting on a fella.
Sally prods Esco into silence. Ada turns away.
Look down our well.
Esco.
She's good. Should look down our well with a mirror. You'll see the future. That's what they say.
He turns to Sally.
You do it.
She does it.
Ada frowns.
What kind of mirror?
A few minutes later.
Well, we're hold on to you, Esco. You hold on.
I got her.
We got you.
They support Ada as she lies on her back over the well.
See anything?
Ada holds a mirror up in front of her face and stares back down past her reflection into the dark well.
I don't know.
I tried many a time, looking for a sign my boys are coming home. I never saw a dicky bird.
Ada angles the mirror so that she can see the gray clouds reflected in the glimmering black water of the well. The ripples dance and tease and suddenly seem to show quite clearly the figure of a man in black walking through a snowy wood. Ada gasps and struggles to her feet.
Are you all right, Ada? What happened?
She peers disbelievingly back down the well.
What'd you see? What'd you say?
Yesterday, I saw you walking back to me. Or thought I did. I found myself crouching over Sally's swing as well.
As she sits on her shabby veranda, the rooster hops onto the rail. Ada grabs a rake for protection.
Like a mad woman staring into its secrets. Was it you I saw walking home to me? Or was it your ghost? After so long, I know I must learn to survive on my own and accept you will not return. And yet I cannot. I cannot.
A figure in a shapeless cotton bonnet with a pack on her back calls up to the house from the overgrown garden.
Them cows wants milking. If that letter ain't urgent, them cows is what I'm saying.
I don't know you.
Old Lady Swanger says you need help. Here I am.
The girl stands, hands on hips.
I need help. I do need help. But I need a laborer. There's plowing and rough work. I think there's been a misunderstanding.
What's that rake for?
Meaning the rake in Ada's hand.
The rake?
It ain't for gardening, that's for sure. Number one, you got a horse? I can plow all day. I'm a worker. Number two, ain't no man better than me. Because there ain't no man around who ain't old or full of mischief.
The girl steps onto the veranda.
I know your plight.
My plight?
Am I hard to hear? Because you keep repeating everything. I ain't looking for money. I never cared for it. Now it ain't worth nothing. I expect to board and eat at the same table. I ain't a servant, if you get my meaning.
You're not a servant.
People's gonna have to empty their own night jars, is my point.
Ada stares at her, bewildered.
And I don't expect to work whilst you sit around and watch, neither.
Right.
Right. Is that a yes or a no?
There's a rooster. He's a devil, I'm sure of it. I go near him and he is at me with his spurs. He's Lucifer himself.
I despise a flogging rooster.
The disheveled girl moves towards the bird.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have...
My name's Ruby Dews. I know your name.
Ruby picks up the rooster and pulls its head off. Ada gasps as Ruby carelessly drops the head onto the veranda floor.
Let's put him in a pot.
Round-faced Ruby goes inside, leaving Ada dumbstruck. Inman is trudging along a faint path through the wide, flat grass beds of a salt marsh. On the muddy shoreline of a great looping bend of sluggish river, he sees a shoal of tiny fiddler crabs. Scooping them up in both hands, he crams them into his mouth. As he heads further inland, the country becomes wooded and hilly, with swift-flowing rivers winding their way through rocks and gullies.
I've gone to find my angel.
true love. As the light begins to fade, he enters a dense woodland of spindly trees. Trudging on into the late night, he comes across a black horse tied to a tree overlooking a shallow ravine. He creeps to the edge and looks down towards the river. A figure kneels over a bundle by the water's edge. The scene is lit by a single flaming torch. Inman creeps closer. He sees that the bundle is a female figure.
Ah, my love. God, forgive me for doing this. I'm so sorry. I'm sending you to a better place.
He picks up the woman. Inman dashes down.
Hey!
And points his gun.
Don't do that. Don't pull that trigger. Oh, man of God. I killed several of them.
I mean, I'm God's minister.
What part of God's business is throwing a woman down a gorge?
A slave woman. Do you see that in the slide? Black as a bucket of tar.
She did.
I drugged her like you would a butterfly. And I care for her. It's the heartbreak of it. She's got my bastard in her belly.
Come on. Back up.
He pushes the man back up the slope.
I'm begging you. It's better you blow out my brains than return me to this place.
You're going to put it back where she sleeps.
They arrive in a village.
I do that. The members will lynch me. Siren, a bastard, while serving as their preacher. We're a strict congregation. We've churched men for picking up a fiddle on the Sabbath.
So you reckon to kill her? What, because she's a slave?
Inman puts his gun to the preacher's head and marches him to his house.
There's a back door. Have pity.
In the preacher's kitchen.
Thank you. I was going to do a grievous wrong.
The preacher lays the drugged slave woman in front of the stove.
I think I should go back up to my wife.
He gets to his feet.
She wakes at the slightest noise.
Where's some paper and a pencil?
At dawn, Inman leaves the black-suited, long-haired preacher tied to the railings outside his house, his written confession wedged into his mouth. At Cold Mountain, Ruby knocks on Ada's bedroom door.
Hey, Ada! You up?
Ada struggles awake.
Yes. What? It's still dark.
Tell that to the cows, it's late!
At night, Ada sits down at her dining table with a book and a carrot.
You all set?
Well, I just have to eat something.
Well, then you got to get up earlier. What's that?
A novel.
You want to carry a book, carry one you can write in. We got our own story. It's called Black Cove Farm. Catastrophe. I can spell it, too. Learned at the same place you did in the schoolhouse. One of the first words they taught me. Ruby Dews. You are A-C-A-T-A-S-T-R-O-P-H-E. 3 years I was in school before my daddy, saying God rest his soul, was like wishing him what he had in life. He lived to rest. He's born tired. Decided better use for me than have me sat all day in front of a chalkboard.
In the stable, Ruby throws her back into shoveling hay. Ada tries to do the same, but doesn't have the same easy technique.
Number one, lay out a winter garden for cool season crops. Turnips right there, onions, cabbage.
Ruby tramps through the overgrown garden.
Collards. Number two, patch of shingles on the barn roof. Hey, we got a maul and frog?
Maul?
Maul, M-A-U-L. Number three, clear and turn this field.
They both tramp through a field of dried corn. Ruby bites on a mouthful of soil, shrugs, and spits it out.
No harm done letting it go. Now we'll do well. Number 15, 16, number 16, put up some gourds for a martin colony. Keep away these crows. One thing in abundance on this farm, and that's crows. Shut the gate.
Ada, trying to keep up with her bossy new assistant, stops to do as she's told. Inman, carrying his bedroll strapped to his back, walks along a sunlit pathway between two fields of ripe corn. Hearing a noise behind him, he glances back over his shoulder and then walks on. Something moves in the dried cornfield. Inman glances behind him again and watches in surprise as a figure wearing a straw hat obscuring his face in the sunlight emerges from the corn and comes out onto the path. The figure is joined by a child and two or three other black men, one of whom carries a basket of eggs. Inman moves towards the group and holds up a banknote.
I'd pay $1 for an egg.
The two black men exchange a wary look.
I've got no quarrel with you.
They back away.
Hey! I'm out near the Cape Fear River.
As they hurry off in the opposite direction, Inman clutches his neck in pain and spits on the ground. He sighs as he watches them scoot away. He turns and goes over to the edge of the field and picks an ear of corn. He pulls back the coarse leaves, brushes off the loose weevils, and bites into the worm-eaten, blackened cob. He spins round at the sound of firing. He tosses down the cob, reaches for his gun, and dives into the cornfield, just as a band of horsemen gallop out of the wooded area. Inman forges his way through the cornfield as he flees for his life. Horsemen and dogs thunder by. Inman runs deeper into the cornfield, pushing aside the dried stalks as he runs through them. Further on, he wades through a lily swamp in a silver birch wood.
I can get you out of here.
Inman looks up in fury at Preacher Veezy standing by the edge of the swamp.
I dare say that's Home Guard following you. They're out on the road, hunting down deserters. And I don't recommend that way. You'll meet half the town coming after me with a noose. Thanks to you.
I should have shot you when I had the chance.
I know where there's a ferry crossing. Or you can stubborn yourself to death.
If this is a trap...
Please yourself. I'm just being a Christian.
The two men step onto a jetty.
You got any money?
$5?
For $5, I wouldn't give parched man a dipper of this river water.
John says ferry $5.
Nobody crossed these waters unless they're running from someplace.
The young girl is in a rowing boat.
You want to wait for your friends?
I can give you $30, Confederate.
Well, all right, let's go.
Whatever that's worth.
Veezy steps into the boat. Inman fishes for the money in his trouser pockets and jumps in, clutching his neck.
They cut off my hair. That was hard. I was vain about my hair. I had curls.
Inman glares at Veezy.
But I deserved it. I'm the Reverend Veezy. Have I seen you in church?
No, not like a tornado. I'd say these days, the devil rules the roost.
The red-cheeked girl in her linen cap gives Inman the eye.
$30 more, we can go to that cabin. I can pull this dress over my head.
Have we got $30?
The girl is shot out of the boat. Inman retrieves an oar as the girl's dead body floats up to the surface. Inman rows Veezy bales water. Three men fire at them from the lake shore. Ruby and Ada.
What's this wood? I don't know. In? I don't know. Pine. Locust. Pine. Where's north? North?
As Ada hesitates, Ruby points north.
Name me three herbs that grow wild on this farm. I can't, all right? I can talk about farming in Latin. I can read French. I know how to lace up a corset, God knows. I can name the principal rivers in Europe. Just don't ask me to name one stream in this county. I can embroider, but I can't darn. I can arrange cut flowers, but I can't grow them.
Ada, her long blonde hair loose around her shoulders, paces.
If a thing has a function, if I might do something with it, then it wasn't considered suitable.
Ruby frowns at Ada, uncomprehendingly.
Why?
Ada shakes her head helplessly.
Ruby, you can ask why about pretty much everything to do with me. This feint is about the first thing that I've ever done that might produce an actual result.
The two women lift up a log and secure it into position. Ruby turns to look at Ada with another questioning frown on her face.
So you never wrapped your legs around this hymen?
Ada's mouth drops open in shock, and she slaps Ruby across the chest. and a coy smile creeps into her reaction.
Come on!
She hurries back to the house, followed by Ruby. After dark, Ada plays the piano, with a photograph of Inman propped up against her sheet music, illuminated by one lone candle. Ada is completely immersed in her playing. Mousy-haired Ruby, with her head leaning against the banisters, watches and listens to Ada through the half-open door of the sitting room. Ruby's eyes close as she gets caught up by the music. On a blue sky day, Ada, shielding her eyes from the sun, watches her piano being carted away, leaving behind a barrel and some sacks of grain. Ruby wanders off with a pig on a lead. Ada, her skin pink from the heat, sighs deeply. Ruby glances over her shoulder at Ada struggling to pick up a grain sack and carrying it with difficulty into the house. Indoors, Ada's fingers lightly run along the top of the sack as if touching piano keys. Ruby comes inside.
We're careful. Now we'll get through winter. I got old man Roy to give me 10 of them sheep. On account I said they so small, put together, they weren't no bigger than 6 proper sheep.
My father always wanted sheep on this farm.
Ada goes back out.
I cut off my hair once for money. My daddy got $2 for it. Made a wig for some rich feller in Raleigh.
Ada glances over her shoulder at Ruby with increasing respect.
I'm just saying I'm real sorry you had to lose your piano.
Ruby, it was my idea.
Stalbrod liked to call himself a musician. My daddy, he could play 6 tunes on a fiddle. Got himself shot dead at Petersburg. I was like his goat. Or some creature tethered to a post.
Ruby holds up one of the sacks.
He left me once. Up in the mountains, I was 8. He's gone over 2.5 weeks.
He left you?
That's all right.
She tosses the sack on her shoulder.
My daddy, he'd walk 40 miles for liquor, not 40 inches for kindness.
Inman tries to catch a salmon.
I'm so plugged up. Used to be as regular as morning prayers. Matter of fact, I could set my watch by my bowels. Open my gut now. They find turds. Stacked up like little black twigs.
Inman ducks behind a rock.
Home guard!
Feezy ducks down. They watch the home guard thunder through the woods nearby. As Feezy stands up, he sees something.
Hey! Shh! Look at this!
Keep your voice down!
He pulls a flexible saw from under a tree trunk.
Look at this! It's a good saw!
And it's not yours.
You're a Christian. Don't you know your commandments?
Yeah, you'll find the good Lord very flexible on the subject of property.
He eyes the two-handed saw.
We can do a lot with this saw. Cut down a tree. Play music with it. You're gonna thank me for this saw.
Say thank you when I've lost you and I've found some food.
You'll see. You'll thank me.
They wander off through dense forest with Inman in his dome-shaped hat leading the way. They come upon a man pulling on a rope tied around a brown and white bull's neck, trying to move it out of a shallow stream. Veezy, holding the saw, steps forward. The man starts.
Good day to you.
The man holds up his arms. Veezy, wearing his unbuttoned long coat over his long johns, holds up his arms. The man stumbles towards him.
My old bull wandered off and died in this here creek. Poisoned up our waters, how I found him.
He hands Veezy a bottle.
Thank you.
You are a true Christian.
Inman joins them.
That's a rank odor from that animal.
Been dead a good while, I reckon.
This is a tricky one.
The man smiles eagerly.
You fellas help me out, my woman will cook you up a good dinner.
I'm getting an idea. My saw is a remedy. I believe you need 2 people. And one on either end.
Yeah. Give me that saw.
Inman, throwing off his outer clothes, grabs the saw, steps over the bull, and sizes it up.
Let's do this in chapters.
That's right.
Yeah.
Start at the neck.
Beasy winces in disgust.
Oh, well, that is unpleasant.
Later they come to a clearing.
There's my place. Hope you can stomach a yard chock full of female.
Beasy stops.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Hallelujah. Hallelujah! Oh, hallelujah! The Israelites!
What happened?
He's got a shit coming. It's overdue.
The tribes of Israel are about to flee from the banks of Egypt.
Good God. Hey, bars are stopped for supper.
Bottle in hand, Junior leads the other two towards his log dwelling.
Brought my woman home. She showed up with her three sisters, so-called, and their brats. That's May, Dolly, Charlotte, and the pretty one in blue is my wife, Lila.
Four women line up to see their approach.
Those are fine examples of the female.
At dinner, Junior dances, knees bent on the table, with a wild, leery look in his eyes. Enman blinks, woozily.
Oh, I'm about to pass out.
My homebrew sneaks up on you. Curdles and dirtles.
Junior pours out more alcohol.
Oh, look, he's gone now.
Pointing to Enman. A plump woman, May, squeezes Veezy's inner thigh.
I'm leaving soon as I fall. Y'all are having too much fun for me.
Really? Goodbye.
Well, yeah, I got a bunch of traps need visiting, but I'll be back before dark tomorrow. Y'all still be here?
That's my fervent prayer.
I'll say my goodbye. I gotta go. I got miles and miles and miles and miles ahead of me before I reach the Blue Ridge.
Blue Ridge? What's the hurry?
Maybe I will just lie down and moan.
Yeah.
This house is on a bit of a tilt.
Yeah, it is a bit crooked.
Inman has collapsed on a bench. May's hand rubs Veezy harder.
What about you, Reverend?
I'm heading for that smokehouse. And I'm ready to be washed clean of my dirt.
Yeah, May, you go tend to him.
Veezy staggers to his feet.
All
right. Y'all get to bed. Everybody else got their job.
Come on, get to bed.
Yeah.
Come on,
come on. Everybody to bed. Lila, you stay with them kids.
Get on up the stairs.
I'll be seeing you.
One of the women straddles Inman, who's barely awake.
Look.
He's mine. You go rub yourself off on the preacher. I'm gonna make him hug me till I grunt.
He's pretty, ain't he? Yeah.
First, get him, man.
Having pushed away both sisters, Lila slumps on the edge of the table. She looks across at Inman sitting up on the bench.
Or
he pulls himself up onto his feet and staggers past her.
I know.
She kicks up a bare leg and presses her foot into his groin.
How about that? What's that favor?
She pulls off the top of her dress, exposing her naked body underneath.
Gotta go.
Get off! Ride me all the way to China.
With her skirt pulled up over her naked buttocks, she leans over the edge of the table, swaying seductively. Inman stands over her unsteadily, blinking at her inviting flesh. His hands cup her buttocks. He closes his eyes and doesn't move.
You shy? Need a hand?
She goes to unbutton his flies.
Let's have a look. We can muster.
He drops his letters. The three guardsmen.
Shut! On guard.
Lila cowers.
Cover yourself up! I told you! You don't touch the money!
Next door, May and her sister are pleasuring Veezy.
I have a special prayer you come visit.
Get up.
Evening, Hank.
Evening, Hank. Took your time.
The guardsmen shove Veezy and Inman out of the house.
You fools fall for it every time.
Junior takes his financial reward from one of the home guard.
God will judge you, you Judas.
Thanks.
God will judge you.
Move out.
Our lives are on your rotten soul.
A little girl.
Mister?
Your rotten soul.
Shut your mouth.
Hans Inman's Ada's photo.
Pleasure doing business with you, boys.
Judas!
Save your breath. You get a long walk back to the fight.
Ada and Ruby, both wearing cowboy hats, ring Sally Swanger's door.
Ada Monroe and Ruby Hughes, look at you both.
Look at us both what?
Like a couple scarecrows after a thunderstorm.
We need a scarecrow. Bird's done ate up half our winter garden.
For all your kindness, coffee and a pie.
Yeah, that's real coffee. It ain't chicory and dirt. Found a sack hidden in the larder.
Thank you both. Ruby, I look forward to this. We all do. Esco and me.
She made it.
I made it.
Sally gapes in surprise.
Good God in heaven.
I'm still living.
Well, I know Esco's going to be real sorry he missed you.
Ada and Ruby smile at her cheerfully. Perplexed, their smiles fade, and they leave. For a moment, Sally watches them from the other side of the glass as they go.
Struck you as odd?
What?
Stood at her front door?
I know.
Number one, I know that woman all my life. I never stood outside her house. She'd let a wolf in if it knocked at the door.
Perhaps I don't know. Perhaps she was busy.
Number two, old man Swanger's inside that house. I could smell his pipe burning.
As they walk, Ada dwarfs Ruby.
Number three, look at them fields.
What about them?
We come by here a week ago, and they's waist high in hay. You telling me that's work for one old man and his dog?
Vizi and Inman are part of a group of a dozen chained captives, black and white, being led through hilly farmland by a handful of Confederate soldiers.
Yankees! Yankees! Cavalry! Federal raiders! Just over that hill!
Get those sacks of shit up that hill.
Come on!
The bearded captain dismounts while the foot soldiers hustle the two groups of prisoners over the brow of a ridge rising beside the trail. They all lie flat.
Get those horses under cover. They see us, we're dead.
Make a move! Make a noise!
The captain draws his revolver and crouches down over his captives. The foot soldiers lying beside them raise their rifles. From around the shoulder of a hill, a column of Yankee cavalry in their navy tunics ride two abreast. The foot soldiers nervously look down the barrels of their rifles. Inman, chained to Vizi and three other men, steals a look over the ridge at the soldiers approaching along the track. He looks down again, gritting his teeth in anger and frustration. When he raises his head a second time, he sees that the Confederates can't fire without revealing their position.
I'm getting out of this. I'm not getting shot again for some cause I don't believe in. Come on. Come on, they can't shoot.
They all leap to their feet, knock over their guards and run uphill.
Keep going, come on. Stay in it.
The captain scrambles after them. Vizi sees the Yankee cavalry charging up. The captain fires into his prisoners. Vizi falls, wounded. The captain fires again, but is himself shot by the Yankees, who are firing indiscriminately at both the soldiers and the prisoners.
Grab their boots and rifles! Let's move on! Let's go!
The prisoners are left for dead. In the vegetable garden at the side of the Black Cove farmhouse, Ada is putting the finishing touches to a scarecrow. Teague stands watching her unseen from the fence by the roadside.
That scarecrow ain't gonna frighten enough no Yankee.
He smiles.
Uh-oh, you trying to make a man for yourself?
No.
He nods solemnly.
When I come by, a few days, I don't pass by. Looking out for you.
I know.
She walks past him.
I see you.
And spins round on him at the gate.
And I don't like it.
Where's your little servant girl?
Ruby.
She trading off more of your daddy's silver?
Stop it.
Her nose is in the butter. Her nose is right in your butter!
Ada scurries up the steps to her porch. Teague, dressed in a shabby officer's tunic, yellow waistcoat, and battered leather hat with a brim turned up at the front, storms back towards the road. The bodies of the bearded Confederate captain and his men sprawl on the muddy hillside above the track. their guns and boots gone. Alongside them in two heaps lie their slaughtered prisoners, still chained together. In one of the heaps, a figure stirs. Inman struggles to free himself from under his companions. He pushes at a body slumped across his stomach, rolling it away onto its back. It's Vizi, his ginger stubble and cropped hair caked with mud. Inman turns the dead man's chubby face towards him and stares down at it with an expression of regret. He writhes to free himself, then struggles to his feet, but his manacled wrists are still shackled to his four companions. Grasping the chains in both hands with immense effort, he starts to haul the bodies downhill towards the track. He collapses to his knees, stands back up, digs in his heels, and heaves again. On the road to Black Cove, Esko looks up from hoeing the field opposite his house to see Teague and four Home Guard troopers riding up. He calls across to Sally, hanging out sheets on a line in the front garden.
Down.
Sally hurries towards the house. Esko picks up a shotgun and crosses the road to his gate, where he turns to face Teague and his young flaxen-haired sidekick, Bosey.
Afternoon.
Two riders dismount and approach the fence.
Don't spread out. Why are they spreading out?
I never seen a man work a field with a shotgun before.
There's a war on. Get off my land!
Your boys come home?
Ain't seen my boys in 4 years. They're out fighting other boys, not old men and women.
So you won't mind if we look around?
Teague edges forward.
Because we think they're here. We think you've got them hit up somewhere.
What I gotta give you? A chicken? A lamb?
Teague sneers.
Sure. Thing is, you've only got one barrel, and there's five of us. That's not a fair fight.
One trooper moves behind Esko. At a sign from Teague, Bosey dismounts and draws his sword.
King of Kings!
Esko's gun is kicked.
Hey! What's that?
Bosey stabs Esko.
You're harboring deserters. I could confiscate this farm and everything on it. Every plate, every sheep, every little predator chicken shit. I could confiscate your old lady's asshole. So don't you offer me no bird.
Blood smears across a sheet as two troopers hoist Esko's body over the washing line. Later, Bosey tightrope walks along the top rail of Esko's fence, his long hair dancing in the breeze. Sally has a noose around her neck and is tied with her hands wedged between the fence rails. Bosey stamps down hard.
Come on, boys! Mama's calling!
Two young men burst out of a shed.
Mama! No! Mama! Mama! No!
Teague shoots one of the sons. Bosey somersaults off the fence, takes aim, shoots the other, then casually wipes a hand across his upper lip, where his nose has started bleeding. Inman lies motionless on the ground, still shackled to the other four bodies. A long-haired goat with curled horns ambles past, and a figure in a long, shabby coat, shotgun in hand, stops and peers down at him. Later, with his throat wound bandaged, he finds himself being dragged through a wood on an improvised stretcher. He stares up through the autumn leaves, disoriented and feverish.
Buggery and shit. If I'd have known you were this heavy, I'd have left you in those chains.
The woman lowers the stretcher to the ground in a clearing beside a rickety wooden hut on stilts in a wood. Ada and Ruby come running down the road to Esko's farm. Ruby has a rifle held to her shoulder. Ada sees Esko's body slung over the washing line, dripping with blood.
Sally!
Ruby finds Sally still trapped in the fence by her wrists. She tries to pull the top rail up to free her. Ada comes running.
I.
Together they pull at the top rail.
Darling, what? She's saying don't bother. Go!
Ada lifts and Ruby pulls her free.
No! Get her neck! Sally, get her neck!
They loosen a rope noose from her neck.
This stand long.
Ruby's eyes burn angrily.
God won't let it stand this way long.
Outside her shack, the old woman lets a white goat feed from her hand. Inman appears in the doorway.
How long have I been sleeping?
2 days, 3 days. Not long enough.
I can't stop here.
Sit down before you fall down.
I'm a deserter. They find me here. Things could be bad for you.
Well, what are they going to do? Cut short my young life?
He sits on the top step, wearing only a blanket. The old woman fondles the young goat's face in her hand.
I've learned a person can pretty much survive off of a goat. A goat gives you company, and milk, and cheese. And when you need it, good meat.
She takes a knife and slits its throat.
There's my beauty. So you've been fighting?
Inman stares ahead, blinking rapidly.
I could be at killing. For days. My feet against the feet of my enemy. And I always killed him.
There is a deadness in his eyes as he speaks.
He never killed me.
I don't know why.
The woman looks up.
Gave it a try to look at you.
He laughs mirthlessly.
Young as he did.
See, I think there's a plan. There's a design for each and every one of us. You look at nature. Bird flies somewhere, picks up a seed, shits a seed out, plant grows. Bird's got a job, shit's got a job, seed's got a job.
She strokes the head of the dead goat.
And you've got a job. You've done good, girl. You were a real beauty.
Carefully, she lifts up the dish containing the goat's spilt blood. Later inside the hut, she uses a silver fork to serve out goat's meat into Inman's bowl. He eats it, sitting on a small bed.
Sometimes I think I'm crazy when I'm just hungry.
Now drink this. It eases the pain and your sleep.
She pours some granules into a horn goblet of water. He drinks it unquestioningly. She takes the bowl and goblet.
Is she waiting for you? This Ada Munro?
Yes, she was. I don't know. Or even if she knows me.
Lie down.
He obeys.
I'm like the boy who goes for wood in winter and comes back in spring with a whistle.
She sniffs at a jar of ointment.
Like every fool sent off to fight with a flag and a lie.
She puts some on her fingers and examines the wound on his neck.
That's a lot I'm getting to you. That's good.
She rubs it in.
Say something more.
Oh. His back arches off the bed.
She got me a book. Ada Munro.
He stares at the ceiling, swallowing hard.
A man by the name of Bartram. He wrote about his travels. Sometimes. Just reading the name of a place. Near home.
She rubs some ointment onto a cut on his forehead. Later, he sits outside.
Sorrel Cove. Bishop's Creek. Those places belonged to people before us. To the Cherokee. What did he call Cold Mountain? What kind of name? Not even a real name. Break your heart.
The old woman listens to him with a shrewd, non-judgmental look.
Is her? She's a place
I'm hidden.
I hardly know her. I hardly know her.
His face contorts with grief.
I just can't seem to get back to her.
At Black Cove Farm, Ada reads to Sally, who lies in bed, her hands still bandaged.
To have traveled so far, from east to west, 1,000 terrible miles.
I have to close my eyes.
My feet tread in all God's surface. His ocean, his swamps, his slopes and ridges. To find myself, at last, a mark in the aching snow. From whence I beheld through a blue haze, a world of mountains piled upon mountains.
Ada goes to the window.
Ada!
She pulls open the sash.
It's a man!
What is?
Right in our corn crib! Got him in a trap! That's him yelping!
Help!
Here.
They creep up to the trap.
Help!
Listen up! You got a barrel trained on your rear end?
Get me out of this dang thing.
You got a weapon?
No, ma'am. My fist is about to drop off.
Ruby stares at the man.
Unbelievable. Stop right there.
Ruby?
She kicks him hard in the side. She turns to Ada.
That's my daddy.
She marches back to the house.
Just so as you know, I can eat while she's doing this.
Just so as you know, you ain't eating inside. Number one, they hang people around here for taking in deserters. Number two, even if they's giving out prizes, you'd still eat outside.
You're scarred.
I'm what?
Your heart scarred. I did wrong to you.
You'd be scarred. You'd be real scarred if I hadn't wrapped them trap teeth in second.
Which was my idea.
Which was her idea.
I hurt you.
Good God.
I made up 50 tunes with you in mind. Ruby this, Ruby that, Ruby with the eyes that sparkle.
Hey! Let's agree. You beat me. You abandoned me. You ignored me. And you beat me some more. And all that's better. Ruby with the eyes that sparkle.
I'm changed. People change. War changes people. Something terrible.
Ruby's told you, I've no doubt. I wasn't always the best.
You were an asshole!
I can't disagree with that. I was.
Get him out of here!
Music's changed me. I'm full of music, Ruby. Wish I'd brought a fiddle. Hey, Ruby, I got a new fiddle. Oh, that's a beautiful fiddle. It's full of tunes, Ruby. I didn't know how to do me.
All set.
Stobrod looks from Ada to Ruby, trying to think of how to respond. Ada, having bandaged his hands, gives him his hat, which he plops on his head.
Bless you both.
Ada notices Ruby's unforgiving expression softening.
All right, then.
As he gets to his feet and makes for the door, Ruby looks away, wrapping some bread in a towel.
Ain't you got a proper coat?
He turns in the doorway.
Oh, darling, I'm fine, you know. Did you say the word? I won't come back neither. Don't want to put you or your mistress here in any bother.
I'm not Ruby's employer.
Oh, beg pardon.
Nobody is.
Oh.
He smiles and nods and turns to go.
You know who really needs a coat, darling, is my partner, Fat Boy, named Pangle. We're hiding up in a cave with a singer from Georgia. And Pangle, he feels a cold like a thin man, but ain't no coat to fit him.
Ruby eyes him warily. Ada folds her arms. He sees they aren't buying his story.
I love you, Ruby. In case the sky falls on our head. You always were a good girl.
Ruby drops her head. As she looks up, her eyes well with tears. Ada stands behind her, not sure what to do.
He's so full of manure, that man. We could lay him in the dirt and grow another one just like him.
That's medicine. That's goat meat.
Maddie hands Inman a bundle.
And you're sick of both.
I have a deal to thank you for.
That's just for show.
She hands him a pistol, the handle turned towards him. He takes it and looks up at her with gratitude and respect. But she's already gone back into her shack. Dressed in a threadbare brown coat with a bandage round his neck and a duffel bag on his back, he strides off past Maddie's small herd of goats. At Black Cove Farm early next morning, Ada wakes to the sound of a fiddle. She pulls her sheet over her and tries to go back to sleep. Ruby wakes and lies back on her pillow and listens wonderingly to the music. She sits up, throws back her covers, and crosses to her window. In the garden below, she sees Stobrod playing the fiddle, and next to him another man dressed in black, playing the banjo. Ada appears at the window next to her. Ruby pushes up the window.
Eyes that sparkle.
Ada laughs, Ruby glares. Pangle, the chubby banjo player, grinning dumbly, does a little twirl, while Stobrod finger plucks the fiddle. And the two of them bob up and down alternately, like two pistons.
Get on back where you came from!
Thank you for my coat!
Thanks for the food!
Get!
Ruby with the, oh, the sparkle!
I love my coat!
The men run for it. Ada shuts the window with a smile. Inman wanders along a rocky stream, eating. He sits down on a rock and scoops up a handful of water from the stream.
My love for Linton is like the foliage in the woods. Time will change it, I'm well aware, as winter changes the trees. My love for Heathcliff resembles the eternal rocks beneath, a source of little visible delight, but necessary. He's always in my mind.
She ain't gonna marry Linton, is she? You can't say that about Heathcliff and then marry Linton.
Ada, who was reading to Ruby in bed,
we'll find out,
brings out her photograph of Inman.
Tomorrow.
Ruby grabs the book.
Not wait till tomorrow.
She flips through the pages, barely visible in the candlelight.
A source of little visible delight, but necessary.
She looks across at Ada, whose back is turned towards her in the bed.
I like that. She lets me down.
Ada, her eyes brimming, lies with the cover pulled up to her chin and gazes at Inman's stern, handsome face. On a stormy night, Inman, now heavily bearded and soaked to the skin despite having a blanket over his head, limps into a clearing. His pace quickens as he hurries up the steps of a wooden shack.
I'm a Confederate soldier. On furlough. And need shelter. And food.
The door remains shut, and with the rain trickling down his cheek, he turns to go.
I've got a rifle!
His eyes shine in the darkness.
Fair enough.
Some beans and corn pop. All I got.
He stumbles up the steps. Inside, a young woman with long, curly, dark hair stands with a baby in her arms.
Thank you.
I'm alone here, as you can see, with my baby. I need to believe you mean no harm.
He sheds his duffel bag and produces the pistol with the handle turned towards her.
No.
I don't want it. I had my way, they'd take metal altogether out of this world. Every blade, every gun.
He drops the gun to the floor, blinking rapidly as he watches the woman lay her shiny-cheeked baby into its cot.
All right. You're burning up, little man.
Inman watches at a polite distance. As she straightens, she nervously fastens the top buttons of her dark green dressing gown. He warms his hands by the fire, glancing worriedly at the baby in its cot.
Is your baby sick?
My man's dead. Took his wound at Gettysburg and never saw his boy.
I'm sorry.
It's pretty much what you'll get if you knock on any door this war. Man dead. Woman left.
She brings Inman a plate of food.
This mean food, but it's hot.
There's been no hunting on the road, just cress and roots.
I need to try and feed this man.
She picks up her baby and rocks him in her arms.
You gotta eat something, baby.
For a split second, the whole cabin fills with blue light. The woman sits on the side of her bed with her baby son. Inman stays by the fire with his plate of food.
You won't feed.
I'm Inman, by the way. That's my name.
I'm Sarah. My baby's Ethan.
Glad to know you both.
A little later on, Sarah, carrying a lantern, opens a door into a small shed, scattered with corn husks, attached to the side of the cabin.
You look about his size. He was another man straight up and down.
She hands him some boots.
Thank you.
And with a respectful nod, goes back into the main room. There she steps out of her dressing gown, and in her short-sleeved, long white nightdress, she hangs it up on a peg and goes to lie down, pausing to look at Inman through the small window that divides the main room from the shed.
Everything fit?
These boots are good boots.
She watches him with her dark brown eyes, and he meets her gaze for a second. She nods.
Well, I'll say goodnight then.
And draws a small curtain across the window.
Goodnight.
And gets into her bed, snuggling down under her fluffy quilt, with an expression of sadness and regret. Next door, Inman lies back on the bed of corn husks and wearily closes his eyes. In an old mill with Stobrod Pangle and the third musician Georgia providing the music, Ada, Ruby and Sally are dancing. Sally wears a faint smile on her face.
She don't speak! Can't speak, I told you. Is she feeble then?
No!
Never mind him.
And the party goes on. In Sarah's cabin, Inman looks up from his bed of corn husks to see Sarah standing at the door of the shed, her dark eyes looking at him with a serious and thoughtful expression.
Will you come inside?
She turns to go. He considers her invitation. In her room, she waits by her bed, with her eyes lowered. As he appears, she turns towards him. He remains at a polite distance.
Could you do something for me? Do you think you could, while here next to me, not need to go further?
His tired eyes contemplate her in the soft candlelight. He looks down, blinking rapidly. He drops his duffel bag on the floor. Sarah gets into bed and makes room for him. As he takes off his boots, she glances across at him, then looks away discreetly, her hands resting on the edge of her quilt. He stands by the bed, removing his outer clothes, but keeps on his underwear. Carefully, he lowers himself onto his back, next to her. His head resting on the soft white pillow, his arms by his side, his eyes blinking rapidly. Sarah, lying back on her pillow, moves her hand towards his hand and touches it. The tears start to trickle down her cheeks.
I'll go, shall I?
No. I don't want you to.
She tightens her grip.
Thing is, I love some. I love someone very much.
He puts his arm around her, and she cuddles up to him, like a child. He lies motionless next to her, his eyes shining in the darkness. At the mill, Ada's eyes shine in the lamplight, as if reunited for a moment in their thoughts of one another.
I know dark clouds will hover over me.
Ruby's fingers idly play with Ada's silver bracelets as she listens engrossed to Georgia singing. Ruby tilts her head coyly as she listens. Next to her, Ada unclips one of her bracelets and puts it on Ruby's wrist. Ruby doesn't notice until the clasp snaps shut around her hand. She turns to Ada in disbelief. Sally watches them with affection. Ruby cradles her shining wrist in her hand.
I am just going over Jordan.
Ruby smiles to herself as she fiddles with the bracelet, carefully tucking it into her sleeve. Later.
Merry Christmas. Tangle?
Not now.
Merry Christmas, Georgia.
Christmas,
nice to meet you.
Merry Christmas, Miss Light.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, darling.
Don't sleep here.
We won't.
It's dangerous. Don't sleep here.
Oh, it's bitter. It could stop one night.
Well, stop one night, we're going to want to stop two.
Oh, I'll be all right. This coat's warm. What about next Sunday? It'll be New Year.
Maybe.
Going to be a better one than 1864.
War's over in a month.
That's what he said a month ago.
Started off being over in a month.
Night, Miss Sally. Merry Christmas.
Night, Miss Ruby.
Night.
Night, ma'am.
Night.
You're staying with us tonight, Sally.
No, that's my Ruby.
She's an original.
And Georgia the singer, Stobrod and Pangle move off into the darkness.
What kind of name's Georgia?
It's where he's from. It's not his name.
Well, I know it's meant to be the ugliest state under the heavens.
Why do you care what his name is?
Ada grins playfully.
Hey, what do you call that cluster of stars right there? Right there.
There? That's Orion. And that's Gemini, and that is Orion's big dog, Canis Major.
Listen to her, son. She's turned into a regular Highland girl.
Nah, I could always name the stars, Ruby. That was never my problem.
All three women gaze up at the stars. Ada puts her arms around the other two.
I love you, darling.
She pats Ruby's back.
In case that big old sky falls on our heads.
And plants a kiss on her cheek.
And I love you too, Sally. I do.
Sarah bursts into her cabin.
Get up! Get up! Get out of here, quick! Yankees are coming. Yankees, right here. They find you here, that things will go bad on all of us.
Inman gets up.
I can try and fight him.
No, my baby. Please, no. Please, just get.
Grabbing his clothes, Inman pushes open a window and climbs out, wearing only his vest and long johns. He scrambles up a steep hill at the side of the dwelling, where he hides in the trees and listens. An officer, a corporal, and a young trooper come to the front of the cabin.
We're Union Army. We're looking for food.
About that.
The officer drags Sarah into the yard.
There's a baby inside. Get it.
He's sick. Don't hurt him, please. Please, I got nothing.
He ties her to a post in the yard.
That's right. Take the chickens. Take the chickens. They're all I got.
The young soldier looks in the chicken coop. The corporal comes out with the baby.
Say she's only got chickens. You're lying some trash.
He lays Ethan on the muddy ground.
We're hungry. We got all day.
Inman has got dressed.
Those birds won't get you through the winter.
Please cover up my boy.
Just tell us where the food is. We'll pick him up.
My baby's sick. Please just cover him up.
Inman creeps away.
Please, I'm begging you. Please, have mercy.
The corporal sits on an upturned log.
I got a hog. He's hit out behind the house.
Take a look.
The corporal goes off. The young trooper looks uneasy.
He's shaking. Please just cover him up. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
The corporal comes back with a pig.
I got nothing else, I swear.
The officer unties her.
That ain't necessarily so.
Yes. Take me inside. We'll do whatever you want. Take my baby inside. Let's all go inside, please.
The officer drags her away, leaving the baby on the ground. He pulls her into the cabin and throws her onto the table. Inman stands hidden behind the door. The officer rips Sarah's bodice. Inman pulls out a knife. Outside, the young trooper gestures miserably at the baby on the ground.
He's getting ready to take a fit.
What do you care?
With a cynical smile, the corporal gets up and wanders towards the cabin. As the young soldier takes off his cap, squatting down by the baby, and tries to cover it more effectively in its thin cotton wrap, the corporal pushes open the cabin door. The officer lies on top of Sarah.
Hey, come on. Leave some for the rest of us.
Inman buries an axe in his back. The corporal slumps to the ground. Inman pulls the officer off Sarah. The man's throat is slit wide open. Flinging open the door, Inman points his gun at the trooper.
Move away from the baby!
The young trooper stands up.
Towards me!
He steps towards Inman.
Don't shoot. We just wanted food.
Take off your boots.
The trooper starts to take off his black leather boots.
Take off your pants, take off your shirt.
Sarah comes to the door. Her torn dress stained with the dead officer's blood, she runs past the trooper and picks up the baby.
Don't shoot me, please.
She dashes back inside.
We're starving, we haven't eaten in days.
He takes off his jacket.
Come on. We're starving. We haven't eaten in days.
Come on!
He removes his trousers. Inman lowers his gun.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, you get running.
I will. Keep running.
Thank you.
The boy turns and runs. Sarah comes to the door with a rifle. Inman spins round with a start. Sarah peers through the clearing gun smoke, her dark eyes blazing. She lowers the rifle and goes back inside. By the gate where the soldiers tethered their horses, the young trooper's body lies stretched out on the grass, dressed only in his socks, a grey flannel vest and long johns. Inman stares numbly, his blue eyes dull and lifeless. He sinks to the floor, clutching at the doorframe, head bowed. The freshening wind whips his long hair about his forehead. He lifts up his eyes to the hills. The sky is heavy with winter clouds. At Blacko Farm, Ada opens an upstairs window. The morning air is thick with falling snow. She leans on the sill in her nightgown, her blonde hair loose about her shoulders, and reaches out to let the flakes fall on her upturned palm. In the woods, Stobrod and Pangle step out of the mill.
I love the snow. I hate the snow. I hate the cold.
Georgia hurries after them.
Come on!
Fellas, what's the rush?
Baby finds out we've spent the night to be hell to pay.
Their feet leave deep prints in the fresh snow, and something drops from Georgia's coat as he follows Pangle and Stobrod across the bridge. Somewhere to the north, as the sun rises above the peaks of the mountains, Inman treads steadily up a steep, snow-covered ridge, hemmed in by fir trees. Gobbets of ice cling to his drooping moustache and beard. As he reaches the top, the snow-covered Blue Ridge Mountains stretch out before him. He sits down in the snow and gazes in the direction of Cold Mountain. At Blacko Farmhouse, Ada, her hand clasped across her forehead, writes by candlelight.
My love, where are you? With no hope of reaching you, I write to you. As I always do. As I've always done.
A tear trickles down her cheek. Out in the wild, snowbound hills, Stobrod, Georgia, and Pangle camp out for the night. Stobrod builds a fire.
I'm alone, but I don't worry, 'cause I'm sitting on top of the world.
Georgia returns with more firewood. Pangle has found a dead deer.
Reckon we can eat this?
He holds up the stiff, snow-covered corpse.
Hey. Well, you know, you cook something long enough, you can eat anything.
It's froze. How long have I been there for?
You hungry?
Yeah.
Not very long.
Later, all three lie wrapped in their blankets, asleep in the snow. The remains of the deer are skewered on a spit above the fire. Georgia sits up suddenly, pale and heaving. He gets to his feet and lurches away from the camp into the shelter of a snow-covered bank of vegetation. From the opposite direction, four horsemen ride up.
Evening.
Stobrod wakes.
Hope we didn't disturb you.
He sits up.
Do you mind if I warm myself by your fire?
The riders dismount.
Name's Teague. Do I know you?
Stobrod Fuse.
That your wife?
That's a he.
Is he your wife?
We're musicians.
He picks a banjo, I got a fiddle.
Your sweetheart's got a nice piece of flesh on him. Looks pretty romantic by the fire, don't he?
It's a picture of love.
Teague's two troopers hunker down close to the sleeping Pangle. Flaxen-haired Bosie stares pale-eyed at Stobrod.
You want to play that fiddle?
Sure. Sure.
Stobrod prods Pangle.
Hey, wake up.
Teague doffs his hat.
Evening, missus.
Pangle blinks.
Where's Georgia?
Where's Georgia?
Georgia watches from behind the snowbank. Stobrod picks up his fiddle.
Captain Teague wants us to play now.
Love to.
But we heard there was some deserters up in these parts, hidden out in the big cave.
Not come to my ears. So you don't know where this big cave is?
No, sir. You do, Stobbs. He means
no,
that...
No, right, not right. No, no, there is a cave, right, up near Bear Pen Branch. We play some music up there. It never occurred to me there were outliers.
I ain't nowhere near Bear Pen Branch. He's always getting lost. That cave, we live there.
Teague licks his lips.
I used to freeze up in that cave till I got give this new coat. Ruby made me this coat. I like my coat. This part belonged to a reverend, and this part belonged to a horse. Ruby said, what is it? I should pray or nay, depending.
You don't know what he's saying. You got a mind no bigger than a pick of walnut.
This is a good coat.
Stobrod puts his fiddle under his chin and sings. Pangle later joins in.
I wish my baby was born and sitting on its papa's knee,
and me poor girl
were dead and gone.
As Stobrod plays, he keeps his eyes on the newcomers, his face deeply troubled. Bosie's pale, cold eyes stare back at the musicians. Teague gets up. Bosie watches him as he turns his back on the group, unbuttoning his fly.
Till the sweet apple grows on the sour apple tree.
A strange expression comes over Teague's face. He stares into the darkness and starts to sing.
It's lonely bird.
Bosie watches him.
It chills my heart with dread and terror that someone's blood there on his wing. That someone's blood there on his feather.
Stobrod looks over towards Teague. Bosie stares out from under his black hat and curtain of lank flaxen hair. His mouth twists malevolently.
Broke my young heart.
Pangle turns to Stobrod, grinning happily and hooting. Bosie gets up.
We gonna be here all night?
Teague points towards a snow-covered bank of bushes.
Stand over there.
Stobrod looks at Teague as if hoping he might have misunderstood him. But the hope quickly drains from his face. He stares down bitterly into the flames, gets to his feet, and goes over to the bushes.
Maybe she don't know when into the war is another. You don't have to worry yourself about her, is what I'm saying. Or Ada, neither. You know what I'm saying?
You too. You stand over there.
Pangle gets up. Georgia cowers in his hiding place.
We gonna get our tin-type made?
Pangle puts his arm round Teague's shoulder as if posing for a photograph. He grins happily.
Don't smile.
What?
Quit smiling.
He always smiles. He don't mean nothing by it. I told him there ain't nothing in this world worth a smile.
Put your head over your face.
Pangle takes off his hat, holds it in front of his chubby face, then peeps out from behind it, smiling foolishly.
Cover your face with your hat.
Bosie shoots them. In the morning, Ada splits a log with a mallet.
Too.
In the stable, Ruby, her face tense, is winding up some rope as Ada arrives with some blankets.
I told Georgia he can stop here. I told him he can sleep in the barn. He's got nothing inside him. He'll walk out of here and die in the snow.
He can milk cows. I was worried about that.
Ada looks at Ruby worriedly.
It's 5 hours' climb from here. He drew a map.
I'm ready.
You know them fools stayed tonight in the mill? That stop rock dish can't do one good thing without adding a bad. Left tracks in the snow all the way up for the home guard to follow. Sign says shoot me.
Ruby.
Ruby tries to maintain her matter-of-fact air.
Ruby.
She looks up defiantly.
I'm sorry. Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
Ruby's face crumples. She turns away, then jams on her brimmed hat.
I cry one tear for my daddy. I stole it off a crocodile.
Ada shares Ruby's sense of helplessness.
All right, then.
Inman, even more heavily bearded, limps on past fir trees, silhouetted against a backdrop of misty blue mountains. Ada, in a dark coat and hat, her blonde hair tied in two long plaits, and carrying a rifle, strides purposefully along a snow-covered gully next to Ruby leading the horse. With snow beneath his feet, Inman makes his way up a slope through a wood of spindly bare trees. The two women continue on up an increasingly steep mountain path, while Inman makes swifter progress down a snow-covered wooded slope. In a clearing, Pangle's body lies frozen in a half-sitting position, his chubby face turned blue in the cold. Ada and Ruby step warily towards him.
All right, then.
Ruby, rifle in hand, looks around for signs of her father. Ada unflinchingly approaches Pangle's body and looks deeply at the bullet hole in his forehead as she cups his face in her gloved hands.
He ain't here. Ah! Tage probably took him. They did that with the Swanger boys, didn't they? Strung him up as warning.
Ruby finds Tobrid's fiddle sticking out of a snow-covered bush.
They took his coat. Why would they take his coat?
Ruby fights back her tears, then spots something in the wood.
Daddy!
She drops the fiddle and dashes helter-skelter towards the crouched figure. Ada follows.
Daddy! He's still breathing! He's creepy! Don't you doll me again!
Stobrod lies next to a small fire, water boiling in a pan. Ruby heats a knife in the flames.
We gotta get him home. He won't make it. He'll die first. He's got hardly no blood left in him.
They search his back for the bullet that shot him.
There it is. I feel it.
You got it?
Yep. There's a place close. Old Cherokee used to be. It's got shelter, water. He's hide up there when he'd get a temper going.
God!
They move Stobrod into a wooden hut and cover him with a blanket.
I'll go look for some food.
Take the shotgun.
Ada does what she's told and goes off with the horse. A few scraggy turkeys tiptoe through the snow near a rocky outcrop. Ada, with rifle poised, skillfully takes aim. She looks up in surprise. A turkey lies belly up in the snow. She goes over to it and picks it up by its foot. She starts as she sees a male figure further along the pathway. She cocks her rifle again.
Turn around!
The man walks towards her.
Go back where you came from!
He raises his arms.
Go back!
Inman stares at her.
Ada? Ada Monroe?
Bearded Inman gazes at the tall, slender woman aiming her rifle at him. He lowers his arms and stands quite still. Ada slowly lowers the gun barrel with a quizzical look. Inman looks down, his face almost obscured by the brim of his hat. He turns and slowly takes a few steps away from her. My God, she mouths to herself as she watches him walking away. He stands still and shuts his eyes tight. She stops a few feet behind him. With a faint sigh, he opens his eyes and turns to face her. Wearily, disbelievingly, they gaze at each other as snowflakes flutter around them. Inman slowly starts to walk towards her. She starts to walk towards him, as if in a dream. He tries to speak.
You better come with me.
Her blue eyes welling with tears, she nods at him reassuringly. They come back to the Cherokee camp.
Maybe this is Inman.
Ruby looks up in surprise.
Oh, congratulations. I'll send you out with a shotgun a lot more.
Inman turns away.
Looks as if he's about to topple over.
I may need to.
You shot or something?
Not lately.
Ruby brings some of their things out of their hut with her customarily busy air. Ada, hands sunk deep into the pockets of her father's coat, looks at her thoughtfully, wanting her attention.
He's asleep. I ain't surprised. Your man looked tuckered out.
I saw him. In Sally Swain as well, a man like a black smudge in the snow.
Well, there you go.
One the same what I saw. In the well, it was as if he were falling.
He probably just don't remember it right.
I remember it exactly. There were crows, black crows. They were flying towards me.
Ruby, I thought I was seeing him fall. Instead, I was seeing him come back to me. I got big plans for that farm.
Ada nods.
I know you have.
I got a vision in my mind of how that coat would be.
But I'm not Ruby. All this while I've been packing ice around my heart. That'll make it melt.
Inman watches his reflection swim in a bucket of water.
Hey! You about done with my knife? We got a bird to cook.
Just about.
Inman is trying to shave.
You making a pig's ear of that job. Give it to me.
Ruby pushes back his head. He jerks as she brings the knife to his neck.
I don't cut you. Can't see that it'd make a bit of difference if I did.
She maneuvers his chin into position and carefully starts to shave off the remaining tufts of beard on his neck.
You got the right feelings for her? Don't turn your head.
He doesn't look at her, even though she's standing right in front of him.
I do.
Ada nearby is immersed in her thoughts. Later at night, with their campfire still burning, Inman is moving about. Ada, lying wrapped in a blanket on a wooden bench, sits up with a start. She sees him, and with a glance down at Ruby, who appears to be asleep, she goes to join him. Ruby's eyes flutter open.
I'm sorry. I was trying to be quiet.
He puts some more logs on the fire. Ada stands watching him.
Did you get my letters?
I got three. I carried them in the book you gave me. The Bartram.
I probably sent 103. Did you write to me?
Whenever I could. If you never got them, I can summarize.
No.
I pray you are well. I pray I am in your thoughts. You are all that keeps me from sliding into some dark place.
How did I keep you? We barely knew each other. It was a few moments.
A thousand moments. They're like a bag of tiny diamonds.
Don't matter if they're real or things all made up. The shape of your neck. That's real. The way you felt under my hands when I pulled you to me.
They both avert their eyes as they bring that feeling to mind.
You're plowing a field.
You're carrying a tray.
You wouldn't come in.
No, I wouldn't go in.
So that's why I had to carry a tray. So I could come out to see you.
That kiss. Which I kissed every day of my walking.
Longing to see your face.
If you could see my inside, not whatever you want to name it, my spirit, that's what I fear. I think I'm ruined. They kept trying to put me in the ground. But I wasn't ready. But if I had goodness, I lost it. If I had anything tender in me, I shot it dead. How could I write to you after what I'd done? What I seen?
Number one, shut this door, it's freezing. Number two, shut that door, it's freezing. Laying on my back, my fingers poked in my ears, trying to shut out who's got a bag of diamonds, who's carrying your tray. You want to get 3 feet up a bull's ass, just listen to what sweethearts whisper to one another. In fact, if y'all gonna wimble all night, I'm gonna sleep in with him.
And Ruby goes to join her father. Ada and Inman sitting by the fire both smile, both lower their eyes for a moment, and both return each other's loving gaze. Ada gets to her feet.
I say goodnight.
No. Please, don't say goodnight.
Inman watches her steadily as she goes inside their hut, leaving the door open. Ruby, lying on her back in Stobrad's hut, turns her head, a tear sliding down her cheek. In their hut, Ada turns to face Inman.
Wars make some things pointless.
She nods her head with a resigned air.
It's hard to imagine a wedding. I think even my father would recognize that.
Ada, I want to marry you. If you have.
And there's some religion where you just have to say, I marry you 3 times and you're man and wife.
I'll marry you. I'll marry you.
Her face lights up with a grin.
Why is that fun?
I think it's had to divorce you 3 times and you're not married anymore.
I can wait for you.
Oh, I marry you. I marry you. I marry you. I marry you. I marry you.
They move towards each other and kiss.
I have so many buttons. Sorry. Will you turn your back?
He turns away from her. Then turns back.
No. No, I will not.
She smiles in agreement. Later, he lies asleep. Ada, in her father's coat, strokes Inman's head with one hand, touching the contours of his face, running her fingers lightly across his chest, and brushing her lips against the hand that has touched him, gazing at him adoringly. Making love in the flickering glow of candlelight, they are on a journey of discovery. Ada kisses Inman's lean ribs. They both fumble with the lacing on his trousers. Their mouths kiss hungrily. Inman's strong, young, but scarred body envelops her, his lips and fingers caressing her pale, flawless skin. Their bodies interlocked, their hands entwined. Their thirst for each other is both fierce and passionate, yet tender and gentle. He clasps her face in his hands almost in anguish. She pulls him to her, and they surrender themselves to their longing. And night becomes morning in the snow-covered Cherokee encampment. Ruby, in hat and warm coat, comes out of their hut, towards their horse, to find Ada and Inman locked in a kiss. Ruby hangs Stobbard's fiddle bag over the saddle, and Ada approaches her with a blanket.
I'll lead the horse at a pace your daddy can tolerate. You two go ahead now.
No, I don't want to do that. No, we can all go together.
It's safer this way. We're deserters. No one has quarrel with you.
No. He's right.
I gather I need permission from you, Ruby, if I reckon I'm living at Black Cove.
Ruby fixes Inman with her stern look, which gradually softens into the faintest of smiles.
All right, then.
And she goes off to get her father. Inman fetches his things.
You stay on that horse. And don't lose it. Or sell it. Don't need it. Back on the farm.
Stonebrod sits meekly, wrapped in his blanket.
Daddy. I don't want to let you go.
Inman crosses to Ada.
I'll be with you by nightfall.
He jams her hat firmly onto her head and kisses her. Ruby sees them and sighs. They separate.
All right, then.
Ada tears herself away from Inman's side and joins Ruby, taking the two sacks she's carrying and slinging them over her own shoulder, slowing for a moment to look back at Inman with a smile. She turns away and hurries after Ruby, who's gone on ahead carrying the rifle. Inman watches them disappear with a melancholy gaze. The two women stride briskly along the snow-covered mountain path.
Georgia boy's been tending to the animals.
I knew you were thinking I'm here.
I was not. I was thinking on swollen udders.
Oh, and before you say same difference,
I'm saying nothing. Miss Lovey-Dovey. Miss Lovey-Dovey.
Hey!
Tegan Bosey on horseback.
That was a long funeral for your daddy.
That was a white.
That was Irish.
Georgia is tied to one of the trooper's horses.
Now your friend, Georgia here. We went down to visit you when we heard you were harboring deserters. And he told us, after some persuasion, you were up here.
We're up and down this mountain.
Teak nods.
Up and down.
There will be a reckoning. When this war is over, there will be a reckoning.
Teak shows Pangle's coat.
You make this coat. Helping a deserter, that's treason. Now I know it's half horse and half reverend.
Teak stares down at Ada.
Reckoning?
He cocks his rifle.
The reckoning's for your world. It's not mine.
Inman rides into view with Stobbard. Teague fires at them. Ruby fires at Teague, and Bosey shoots at her.
Damn. He's a horrible bastard to kill.
Georgia.
Ruby!
Inman runs towards them, firing. Ada aims Ruby's rifle at Bosey. Inman leaps at the trooper fighting with Georgia, pulling them both to the ground.
Captain!
With Ruby's rifle, Ada clubs the wounded Teague from his horse. Bosey flees on horseback. Inman runs over to where Ada is beating Teague to his knees. Inman pushes her away and aims his gun at Teague's head. No more bullets. Teague, his face covered in snow, struggles for his own pistol. Inman wrests it from him and shoots him dead. Bosey gallops along the track up into the wooded hills. Inman follows him on Teague's horse. Bosey's tracks stand out in the snow. Inman catches up with him on a snowy, wooded hillside.
Come down from there.
No, sir. He is fine. I'll just shoot the horse out from under you. You riding Captain Teague's animal?
I am.
He dead?
I hope so.
Look, give me your gun to ride on home. I'm done fighting. I'm sick of it. I give you my gun, you're gonna shoot me dead.
I will not shoot you, but nor am I going down this mountain looking over my shoulder for you.
That's what they call a conundrum.
Snow falls gently between the trees as the two men ride parallel to each other.
I'll tell you what I got on my side.
What you got on your side?
They both rein in. Bosey's nose is bleeding again, and there's blood on his knuckles as he reaches for his revolver.
The confidence of youth.
Bosey collapses in his saddle. Down the track, Ada looks up from bandaging Ruby's arm. She is tending to her father. Georgia sits propped up against a tree drinking. A flock of crows scatters through the trees towards them.
Inman!
Inman sits on his horse with his revolver raised, staring wearily down the barrel. He lets his arm fall. Bosey's horse canters away, carrying its dead rider with it. Inman watches with total indifference, his head tilted back and to one side. His shoulders heave. He hunches forward and spews out blood. Ada runs up the track as fast as she can. Bosey's horse swerves to avoid her as it gallops downhill. She turns a corner and sees, coming towards her down a snowy track between steep rocks, a man in a dark coat and hat. Black crows flap away out of his path. Inman stumbles to his knees and falls face down in the snow.
No!
She runs to him, kneels down, and hauls him over onto his back. He looks up at her, his eyes wide open, following her every move. She holds his face in her hand, kisses him, and rubs her cheek against his. He struggles for breath as he tries to speak, his eyes shining too brightly.
I came back.
She nods and smiles, though her eyes are full of tears. He smiles up at her, his task fulfilled. She leans close, cupping his face in her hands, rubbing her nose and lips against his, and kissing him gently. Slowly, his eyes close. As the color drains out of his face, she rests her head on his, as if it were a pillow. He lies on his back, arms outstretched, with Ada beside him, a red stain seeping across the snow at his side. Under a clear blue sky, Cold Mountain lies in the grip of winter. As Ada speaks, years pass. At Black Cove Farm, in a lush meadow full of sheep and lambs, a young red-headed girl approaches Ada carrying a lamb. Ada squats on the ground, working with a knife.
What we have lost will never be returned to us. The land will not heal. Too much blood. The heart will not heal. All we can do is make peace with the past and try to learn from it.
As the girl approaches, Ada is cutting the fleece from a dead lamb.
What are you doing?
They died in the night, love. Bring him here.
Don't kill him.
I'm not gonna kill him. We have to try something or else he's gonna die too. It's all right. We're gonna try a little trick.
The young girl kneels down holding the orphan lamb. Ada slips its head through a hole in the dead lamb's fleece, then pulls the fleece back down over its body like a woolly waistcoat. She shoos the lamb away towards the rest of the flock. The dead lamb's mother sniffs it in curiously, then lets it suckle. The orphan pulls greedily at the teat. Ada takes the little girl's hand and squeezes it.
There are days now when I manage not to think of you. When the needs of the farm call with more urgency than my heart.
This time of year, there's so much life everywhere. I find you in all of it. As if you were still walking home to me. If you could see us now this Easter day at Black Cove, you would know every step of your journey was worth it.
At a tea table in the farmhouse garden, Ruby, with her hair neatly combed, wearing a pretty striped dress and bouncing a baby on her knee, gazes over at Georgia, who sings while Stobrod plays fiddle. Ada finishes serving the food and plants a kiss on her daughter's head.
Grace Hammond, nobody said eat.
Sally Swanger, her hair now turned completely white, smiles fondly at the little girl.
Good friends, good food, good family. For all our blessings, O Lord, we thank thee. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Hey.
Sweetheart, there's no cider.
Georgia gets to his feet.
Right, I best fetch it. Got my orders.
He puts down his mandolin and obediently goes up to the house.
I looked once more down Sally's well. And this time there was nothing there to haunt me. Just clouds. Clouds. And then... sun.
The audio description of Cold Mountain was written and produced at IMS. December 2003. Directed by Anthony Minghella. Screenplay by Anthony Minghella. Based on the book by Charles Frazier. Produced by Sidney Pollack, William Horberg, Albert Berger and Ron Yerxa. Executive producers, Ian Smith, Bob Weinstein, Harvey Weinstein and Bob Osher. Director of Photography, John Seal, ACS, ASC. Production designed by Dante Ferretti. Edited by Walter Merck, ACE. Costumes designed by Anne Roth and Carlo Poggioli. Associate producers, Steve E. Andrews and Timothy Bricknell. Original score composed by Gabriel Yared. Executive music producer, T-Bone Burnett. Casting by David Rubin, CSA, and Rona Kress, CSA. Cold Mountain starring Jude Law as Inman, Nicole Kidman as Ada Monroe, Renee Zellweger as Ruby Thewis, Maddie Eileen Atkins, Stobrod Thewis, Brendan Gleeson, Reverend Veazey, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Sarah Natalie Portman Jr., Giovanni Ribisi, Reverend Monroe, Donald Sutherland. Teague, Ray Winston, Sally Swanger, Kathy Baker, Esco Swanger, James Gammon, Bosie, Charlie Hunnam, Georgia, Jack White, Pangle, Ethan Supley, Ferrygirl, Gina Malone, Lila, Mellora Walters, Oakley, Lucas Black, Shyla, Taryn Manning, Blind Man, Tom Aldridge, and Anthony Minghella Film. Unit Production Manager, Sally French, First Assistant Director, Steve E. Andrews, Second Assistant Director, Jennifer Lisi, Executives in Charge of Production, Colin Vaines and Steve Hutensky. Additional cast, Doctor, James Rebhorn, Mrs. Morgan, Emily DeChanel, Mrs. Castlereagh, Robin Mullins, Rourke, Ben Allison, Butcher, Trey Howell, Orderly, Alex Hassel, Swimmer, Jay Tavari. Confederate Officer William Boyer, Acton Swanger, Chris Fennell, Ellis Swanger, Eric Smith, Bardolph, Cillian Murphy, Nim, Richard Brake, Pistol, Sean Gleason, Rebecca, Rasul Jahn, Brown, Hank Stone, Sheffield, Mark Jeffrey Miller, Joshua, Afemo Omilami, VZ Town Guard, Chet Dixon, Guard, Jamie Lee, Dolly, Jen Apgar, May, Catherine Durio, Mo, Martin Pemberton, Joe, Leonard Woodcock, Grayling, William Roberts, Barbara, Dean Whitworth, Grace Inman, Kristen, Nicole LaPrade. Music by Harry Rabinowitz, engineered by John Richards, recorded and mixed at Abbey Road Studios, London. Orchestrations by John Bell and Gabriel Yared. Music preparation, Dakota Music. Orchestra contractor, Isabel Griffiths. Orchestra leader and solo violin, Rolf Wilson. Solo clarinet, Nicholas Bucknell. Solo oboe, David Theodore. Solo cor anglais, Sue Bowling. Source music editor, Ferdinand Boss. Songs recorded and mixed by Mike Pearson. On-set music advisors, Dirk Powell and Tim Erickson. Executive in charge of music, Randy Spendlove. Songs arranged except where noted by Anthony Minghella and Henry Burnett. You Will Be My Ain True Love, written and composed by Sting, arranged by Sting and David Hartley, performed by Alison Krauss. Alison Krauss appears courtesy of Rounder Records. Idumea, written by Charles Wesley, 1707. Amsey Chapin, 1812, traditional, arranged by Tim Erickson. Performed by Sacred Harp Singers at Liberty Church. Bonaparte's Retreat traditional performed by Brendan Gleeson. Am I Born to Die traditional performed by Stuart Duncan. Stuart Duncan appears courtesy of Rounder Records. I'm Going Home traditional arranged by Tim Erickson performed by Sacred Harp Singers at Liberty Church. The Cuckoo traditional performed by Stuart Duncan and Dirk Powell who appear courtesy of Rounder Records. Lulu Is Gone traditional performed by the Transylvanian National Marching Ensemble. Catastrophe written by Gabriel Yared, arranged by Dirk Powell. Like a Songbird That Has Fallen, written by Bobby Newworth and Henry Burnett, performed by Real Time Travelers. Ruby with the Eyes That Sparkle, traditional, arranged by Dirk Powell, performed by Stuart Duncan, Dirk Powell, and Brendan Gleeson. Stuart Duncan and Dirk Powell appear courtesy of Rounder Records. Christmas Time Will Soon Be Over, traditional, arranged by Norman Blake and Jack White. Additional lyrics by Jack White, performed by Jack White. Wayfaring Stranger, traditional, performed by Jack White, who appears courtesy of the Third Man Records, Inc., V2 Records and XL Recordings Limited. Sitting on Top of the World, written by Walter Jacobs and Lonnie Carter, performed by Brendan Gleeson. I Wish My Baby Was Born, traditional, additional lyrics by Anthony Minghella, performed by Tim Erickson, Riley Bogus, Ray Winston. Tim Erickson appears courtesy of Appleseed Records. Great High Mountain, traditional, arranged by Ralph Stanley, performed by Jack White. The Scarlet Tide, written by Elvis Costello and Henry Burnett, performed by Alison Krauss, who appears courtesy of Rounder Records. Additional musicians, Riley Bogus, Norman Blake, courtesy of Shinachi Records, Nancy Blake, Mike Compton, Edgar Mayer, courtesy of Sony Classics, Tim O'Brien, courtesy of Howdy Skies Records. The American Humane Association monitored the animal action. No animal was harmed in the making of this film. With thanks to Carter's Grove, the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation, Williamsburg, Virginia, Ron Barden, PricewaterhouseCoopers, the Romanian Ministry of National Defense, and with special thanks to the Virgin Film Office, the North Carolina Film Office, the Western North Carolina Regional Film Commission, the South Carolina Film Office, Matthew Landon, Eric Roth, John Hadity. Camera and Lenses by Panelite, filmed with Panavision cameras and lenses, color by Deluxe, Kodak Motion Picture Film. An Anglo-Romanian-Italian co-production, shot on location in Romania, South Carolina, Virginia, and North Carolina. Copyright 2003 Miramax Film Corp. This motion picture was inspired by actual historical events. However, certain characters and aspects of the otherwise historical characters, events, and dialogue portrayed in the motion picture were created for the purpose of fictitious dramatization. And any similarity of same to any person living or dead is purely coincidental and unintentional. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Distributed by Miramax Films.